And now I'll begin the second part of World Watchers, going into the Interpol connections of J. Edgar Hoover, just a few pages, to share with you what he was, what J. Edgar Hoover was doing at a time when Ronald Reagan was his informer. I think that is very important to have this different perspective now, of thinking that these documents at this late date are coming out to tell us about our great president as an informer in 1941. From the Interpol Connection, this is a book written by Vaughn Young and Trevor Johnson. Just a few pages to share on that. During the time of J. Edgar Hoover's relations with Interpol, this is in 1939 and 1940, with Interpol, he was close to W. Fleischer, a Third Reich criminal police commissioner and a Hoover admirer who wrote the FBI in June of 1939, thanking him for the FBI's annual report, proudly informing him that J. Edgar Hoover is part of the Third Reich's fingerprint division, that they had 371 fingerprint records, and they shared them with the Third Reich. He enclosed a photograph of Berlin's new police laboratory and concluded, "May I have a personal favor? I'd deeply be grateful if you would send me a photograph of yourself with a little dedication." So they sent a photograph. This was after the fall of Czechoslovakia. In June of 1939, a year after Congress authorized the FBI to join Interpol. Now, this is in 1939. They've been in Czechoslovakia. In September, they'll go into Poland. The FBI officials exchanged notes back and forth, and Heinrich Himmler, the Reichsfuhrer's SS chief, was sending an invitation to our FBI people to reply to Oscar Dressler, one of the top Nazis. This is July 1939, to come to the German embassy for a party that Interpol was going to have. The Interpol published criminal statistics for the FBI and gave them to J. Edgar Hoover and explained, and Hoover was vice president of Interpol, that a criminal is determined according to race and attributed the cause of crime to racial differences. And the Nazi philosophy was spelled out that people were classified as antisocials or genetically inferior. Jews and gypsies were determined to be genetically inferior and automatically branded as criminals. And the Nazis established a criminal biological institute to deal with antisocials and criminal kinships. And they were getting ready to get rid of those kinds of people. Those were to be the criminals. And Interpol in 1940... the head of it was Reinhard Heydrich, a man who came up with the final solution along with Eichmann. He was the head of Interpol, and he was the head of the German security police. Reinhard Heydrich consolidated his position, became president of Interpol in 1940, and J. Edgar Hoover was part of the Interpol operation, and also Secretary General Dressler praised Mr. Stuckart's anti-Semitic positions in the Third Reich. And they were going over their passport standardizations for Interpol with all these various fingerprints. And April 15th, 1941, the organization and all of its permanent machinery was moved to Berlin. And it was in the suburb of Berlin is where Heydrich came up with the final solution. This was an Interpol journal number 5 of June 41. This is the time period when Ronald Reagan was informer for the FBI. J. Edgar Hoover was a vice president of Interpol. The Nazis were ready to invade Poland, but they had already taken these Czechoslovakia. And their journal discusses the tools that the Nazis have to use and concentration camps and so forth. This is in the journals. Much of the Gestapo stories in 1941, J. Edgar Hoover corresponding back and forth. In Denmark, another man who had been a delegate to Interpol before the war did well with his new masters. By 1941, Mr. Egil Jacobsen was appointed Minister of Justice in Denmark, solidifying his police power and establishing the Interpol connections in Nazi Germany. And with J. Edgar Hoover over here in the United States, December the 1st, that's just 6 days before the Pearl Harbor, 1941, the FBI's 9-man executive conference recommended that there be no further communications with Interpol. Now, there have been many stories that J. Edgar Hoover knew about Pearl Harbor in advance. I've read these stories and have a lot of material I didn't bring in, I can do, on J. Gruber's knowledge. So 6 days before Pearl Harbor, a letter was sent to J. Edgar Hoover from Interpol, from General Dreiser, Secretary General Dreiser, and they said the FBI would now sever with Interpol at this point. And they already had been in Poland in 1939, invaded Poland. December the 4th, 1941, 3 days before the United States entered the war, J. Edgar Hoover issued a memo saying it is desired that in the future no communications be addressed to the International Police Commission, whose present location is in Berlin, Germany. Now, that's a little bit late. January the 2nd, 1942, was the Wannsee Conference outside of Berlin, where 16 top Nazis, including Adolf Eichmann and Mr. Heydrich, decided that the final Jewish problem, the final solution, would take place to get rid of all the Jews and the Gypsies in 1942. But J. Edgar Hoover very nicely severed just days before the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and Ronald Reagan was an informer for the FBI during those exact days. The Washington Post had a story December 13, 1983, about confidential files of J. Edgar Hoover that had been accumulated by 1941. Again, he was exchanging this information with Nazi Germany, and information was being put in about Hollywood from this. This is the interim of the Errol Flynn era that I'll go into again in detail. I've had on the air before. And this article from the Washington Post in 1983 said J. Edgar Hoover started what he called official and confidential file. Only 700 documents have been released. There are another 10,000 pages that were not released by 1983. These were started 2 years after Hitler invaded Poland, which would be invaded in 39. That's 2 years later. And they were forced, these documents were put together by J. Edgar Hoover starting in 1941. Even Franklin Roosevelt asked J. Edgar Hoover to look into Herbert Hoover because he thought he was working with the Vichy government in France and suspected him. But it was Herbert Hoover that appointed J. Edgar Hoover to be the FBI director. So you know how far that went. And also the Washington Post, December 13, 1983, says that a former FBI agent was an aide to Senator Joseph McCarthy. And, of course, as soon as the war was over, Joseph McCarthy had gone right to Dachau prison to make sure that, among others, Fritz Kramer was released at a time period where he easily could have then come directly to the Pentagon, and he'd recruited Henry Kissinger, and he was brought into this country by Peter Drucker. There were FBI people around Joe McCarthy, and the FBI were part and parcel of the Interpol Nazi connections. Now, several weeks ago, in talking about the poems of Robinson Jeffers and Franklin Roosevelt, I cited some examples. One was, and these are from George Seldes' newsletter, in fact, one was an article, 300 U.S. Writers Suppressed. Now, keep in mind what was going on in Hollywood with the writers and with Ronald Reagan. By 1940, the suppression was taking place with writers. By 1941, the documents say he was an informer for the FBI. Seldes writes, Roosevelt quits the Writers League. And people who think Franklin Roosevelt is so liberal, 800 members of the Writers League felt that he had thrown away and abandoned the New Deal, that he was now working with fascism and fighting the people who were fighting fascism, that he had gone to the side of the corporations. This is what George Seldes was writing. And in 1941, June 41, when Reagan was an informer for the FBI, George Seldes was writing about a man named Frank Buchman, B-U-C-H-M-A-N, and he started the moral rearmament movement. During the war, he was close to Rudolf Hess, to the Nazis. He helped with the plots that Hess was doing in Britain to switch the war against Russia and that Great Britain would be let off free. This man, Buchman, started the moral rearmament group, and Ronald Reagan went directly into his group in Hollywood and was a member of the moral rearmament. Now, when Reagan was starring with Errol Flynn in 1940, Flynn took a little time off and went to the Bahamas to meet top Nazis, and his agent, Dr. Urban, was voyaging all around the world and talked with top Nazis in this period. But among the crowd that Urban and the Duke and Duchess of Windsor and Axel Wintergreen of the Electrolux firm belonged to was the Buckman Group. This Buckman, who had a lot of influence in Great Britain with the British Tory circle and the fascists, and opened up a group in the United States. And Ronald Reagan was part of the moral rearmament in Hollywood in the very early 50s. So not only was he an informer during this time period, but he worked with Buckman. And George Seldes, in fact, writes, the Buckmanism, the original appeasement movement, and it tells about Buckman was for Adolf Hitler and boasted in 1939 that the surrender of Czechoslovakia to Hitler was their work, that he helped with that. And he had a glowing report of Mussolini, and they openly endorsed Adolf Hitler. And Buckman said, "I thank heaven for a man like Adolf Hitler, and that with someone like Hitler, we'll have a God-controlled democracy." These are quotations of Buckman. Among Buckman's converts were several Nazi baronesses, Nazi leaders, American Wall Street men, Dr. Shipler, the editor of Churchman Report, and Jewish rich men, including Louis Mayer. Now, Louis B. Mayer was the head of MGM. Louis B. Mayer was working with Ronald Reagan as an informer to get those kind of people out. Louis B. Mayer happened to be a very close friend of my parents. I grew up in that part of town. In fact, he wanted to put on my wedding and have a big wedding at the temple. And, of course, I didn't go for that. But Ronald Reagan was working with Louis B. Mayer in the 40s during this time period when he was co-starring with Flynn. Louis B. Mayer was working with Buckman, and it was at the MGM studios that Nancy Davis came from Chicago and was taken care of by Mervyn LeRoy and Ida Koverman. Now, Ida Koverman, I've mentioned this before in programs, was the secretary for Louis B. Mayer. I have about 40 autographed pictures of the top stars of MGM at that time that she gave to me. She was the woman who always arranged when we went in and out of the studio. She not only was a secretary for Louis Mayer, she was the secretary for Herbert Hoover at the same time. Hoover had put J. Edgar Hoover into the FBI, and our FBI director was close to Interpol. And this letter of George Seldes, the newsletter, describes Buckman and Hitler and Mussolini, the close affinity, Reagan working with Buckman in the 50s, and in that time period, putting him in the FBI in the 40s in this milieu is a totally different scene than the Cold War in the 50s. And then I cited several weeks ago the newsletter of George Seldes. The FBI is supported by Franklin Roosevelt. He supported him 100%, Seldes wrote, in 1941. This is the time our president was an informer. Roosevelt said he supported him 100%. And Seldes wrote many, many newsletters about Franklin Roosevelt and the artists and the writers and the affinity for FBI director who was doing these various activities. And he also knew that he was working with Interpol. The president of the United States would have to know that. And that is the role that J. Edgar Hoover had. Now, I got out the book on Errol Flynn that Charles Higham wrote called The Untold Story and just turned into a couple of pages. Well, if Flynn and Reagan were acting together and were in this milieu, what was Flynn doing? In case you don't remember or didn't hear those sections, I've had them on the air before. I think I have, maybe not. In October 1940, that's when he's ready to co-star with Reagan, Errol attended a party at the home of Brazilian ambassador. It was full of Nazis. Among them were George Geisling, Consul General in Los Angeles, Fritz Wiedemann, Consul General in San Francisco. Federal agents watched Errol very closely at the party, accompanied by Johnny Meyer, who later goes on to work for the Hughes Corporation. He was seen talking cheerfully with Wiedemann, dancing with two Heil Hitler Nazi actresses, a Nazi nightclub singer. He was seen in close discussions with Wiedemann, members of the Brazilian film industry, and Nazi sympathizers. During the period, Errol was almost constantly in the company of Fritz Wiedemann. A local member of the FBI who wishes to be anonymous pointed out to his superiors that Errol should not consort with Wiedemann after 1939 if he were really a loyal British subject. Errol made intense love scenes with Nazi actress Gertrude Anderson, and the FBI started watching Errol in this time period, but Errol got to do everything he wanted with all the Nazis while the FBI was watching him and while Ronald Reagan was co-starring with Errol Flynn and Ronald Reagan was working for the FBI. Charles Higham writes, Errol extracted no pleasure from making the film Santa Fe Trail, which he made with Ronald Reagan. And then it goes on to some of his adventures in this time period from 1940 to 42. On December the 17th, Errol Flynn set off for Honolulu. He was first in New York on business, then flew to Hawaii. He'd been in Hawaii dating a Nazi agent named Erna Bauer. The FBI was intercepting her telegram to him, which mentions the sinking of Allied ships into Fritz Wiedemann in San Francisco. And there's conversations going on about the ships being sunk, and they're letting Errol Flynn make the movies, and the FBI knows it all along. In the late summer and early fall of 39, this is before the 1940 movie he made with Reagan, Dr. Urban, who was the Gestapo control of Errol Flynn, was almost constantly in the service of German ships. He was issued German Nazi party cards authorized in May the earlier year. He sailed from Hamburg to South Africa, and he was in South America. And a lot of top Nazis are mentioned here in terms of his trip to Shanghai and the people that he was with. He was at a famous hamlet called the Hamlet, the home of spies, Nazi agents that guided U-boats against the British and American ships. Urban was afraid once he'd be arrested in South America. He was picked up in Argentina and had to explain his papers. The Gestapo headquarters at the German consulate provided Errol Flynn, or rather Dr. Urban, his controller, with a passport, a Transa document forged by a Nazi specialist who became a member of the SEAF conspiring in the Orient. He got a German passport with a German seaman's identification, added to credentials his Nazi party card, and so forth. And he goes to Montevideo, Uruguay, and then comes back, Dr. Urban, to Hollywood, where, he, as I say, he's very much in control of Errol Flynn. Urban was terrified when he was aboard one ship because there were 23 German employees of Standard Oil Company who were returning to Germany, and he knew the British patrols were watching the ships with Standard Oil going to the Nazis. That's the Chase Manhattan gang. Urban went to the German consulate again because he had to contact the Gestapo chiefs and arrange for his Nazi documents and authorizations to be put back into a good working system. He was a medical doctor. He went to a society physician in New York, and this book goes on with details about Dr. Urban. Dr. Urban had trouble renewing his passport papers. He had been a naturalized an American citizen in San Francisco. I've mentioned this many times before. He joined the Gestapo, came to San Francisco, was naturalized, and the Secretary of Labor, Francis Perkins, ordered the revocation of his citizenship. And Errol Flynn stepped in for Dr. Urban, and he contacts Eleanor Roosevelt, the president's wife. And Errol Flynn had met Mrs. Roosevelt at a party in the White House, and he used to join the Whitneys at fox hunting in Virginia. He knew they all hated Jews. They used to call him Flynnberg to annoy him. 1940 was an election, and Mrs. Roosevelt was on a nationwide tour on her husband's behalf. She met Errol Flynn in Miami, and he called her about revoking his friend Dr. Urban's citizenship. So through Eleanor Roosevelt, Dr. Urban stayed in the United States. She helped him out, and what did she do? She contacted J. Edgar Hoover. Now, Hoover's FBI records knew that he was a Nazi in Hollywood and everywhere else, knew his connections with Errol Flynn, Dr. Urban's. So Eleanor Roosevelt calls J. Edgar Hoover, and Hoover now is employing the records say Reagan became their informer in 1941. 1940, he's filming movies with Errol Flynn. So she calls J. Edgar Hoover and the Secretary of Labor, and in March 1940, all the investigation of Gestapo agent Dr. Urban is over. Errol Flynn was suddenly able to move around. His friend was not deported. There was no threat to his Nazi friends. Dr. Urban then went on an expedition for the Rockefeller Institute. And this Charles Hyman's book says, for months, the Warner Brothers had wanted Errol Flynn to undertake a Latin American tour to promote his pictures. And he got the go-ahead to go, and he was accompanied again by Johnny Meyer of the Hughes Organization. And on the trip, Errol Flynn and Johnny met Nazis of the highest level of the Gestapo in Buenos Aires, in Rio, in Chile, and other major cities. And he visited American ambassadors. He went aboard military and naval installations, boarded American ships, and had a great deal of intelligence around him in Mexico. Carl Schaefer's of Warner's Publicity met with him. Schaefer was warning him through his head office in New York to make sure Errol Flynn laid off his Nazi connections, but Haim writes in Buenos Aires, the American ambassador, Norman Armour, asked him point blank what his connection was with Urban, who was supposed to lose his American citizenship, who J. Edgar Hoover knew was a Gestapo person. And he said he was an acquaintance and he defended him and that he used an agent to clear him, Richard Hood of the FBI. Armour became alarmed and sent copies of the report on Errol to the offices of the Military Navy Intelligence, the Department of Justice, J. Edgar Hoover, the Attorney General, and the White House, and felt that if Errol was not a collaborator, he was flying in the face of information about Urban, whose name was in every newspaper and magazine, and Errol Flynn was no way an individual who could escape Urban and the Nazis and the grave suspicions around him. So Charles Haim says in his book that the Latin American Council told Errol Flynn that he should slow down and not be seen with Urban so much. However, Mrs. Roosevelt's umbrella of protection held good. And by now, the formidable Hollywood machinery designed to protect its own was working well. Haim wrote, it is hard to realize the extent of the studio's political influence at the time. One Hollywood executive said recently, we just constantly reminded Congress that they were working for us. The Nazis were working for us. We weren't working for them. We represented the public and big business. Stars were idols and the public and they were our business. We didn't want our nest invaded, of course, by communists. We didn't welcome the FBI or anybody else who tried to expose our stars. If the devil himself or Hitler's brother had worked for Jack Warner, if he was making millions, he would have been protected. And Haim goes on to say Urban was continuously active talking about Nazism. He was accelerated by the protection Mrs. Roosevelt had given him. Errol Flynn was grateful. And then they had the audacity to put him into a CCC camp, the civilian conservation camp where Dr. Urban was working as a, quote, private citizen for people put into the CCC camp. And he was stationed at Fort Moultrie in South Carolina that was run by the military, military trained, ready for soldiering at the time of national emergency. And they kicked him off the base because he praised Adolf Hitler and appreciated the talents of Adolf Hitler. Then they moved him to another CCC camp in Florida. And his behavior was so extreme, they took photographs. He was taking photographs of the training methods, the installations, the guns, the weapons, the layouts of the huts, the headquarters. This is this high Gestapo chief protected by J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, nationally, internationally. And he was bragging and talking about Nazism openly and praised when Hitler marched into Paris. He was delighted, and he even made efforts to drag out and whip the boys at the camp. And so they moved Dr. Urban out. And at the time, Claude Pepper of Florida was wondering about Dr. Urban's behavior. So that is the milieu of this person, Ronald Reagan, in the 1941 scene with J. Edgar Hoover, working at Warner Brothers and working with the Buckman moral rearmament with Louis B. Mayer. And at that time, Nancy Davis's father, Dr. Loyal Davis, soon after the war was over in the Philippines with Reverend Gale, who started the identity movement, the religious right, and he was over there with Carl Willoughby, Mr. Wiedenbach, who graduated from Hitler's Kriegs Academy, chief of intelligence with Douglas MacArthur in the Philippines. And I believe, as I've read many spy books, that this arrangement was made of Nancy and Ronald, that she became the control that took him over, and that time period where he appeared to be walking on democratic waters was the early Cold War period before his real informer tentacles came out, and that his recruitment in 1941 is crucial because it is consistent with everything that Ronald Reagan has done. There's an article in the Washington Post several years ago in 1982, 5 years ago. Reagan had been president 1 year, and it's titled, This is a Strategy, and it's written by Stephen Rosenfeld. And in the big letters on top of the article, it said, Reagan appears to accept the whole globe as the stage for American action and all Soviet and radical challenges as fit for American rebuff. And the gist of the article is that Ronald Reagan after 1 year points to the fact that he wants to control the whole world. This was 1982, that he has a policy, a role in the policy to control the entire world. Reagan appears to accept the whole globe as the stage for American action, and all Soviet and radical challenges as fit for this rebuff. We cannot fix all the risks we face at once, William Clark said, this long friend of Ronald Reagan's who brought Elaine Von Dahm to this country, but we are working on it. And this article said that documents exist to show the American power in the event of a global war with the Soviet Union, and that Ronald Reagan was working there towards that. And Rosenfeld said, to me, what was the most disturbing about this national security strategy is it unrelievably had military tones. There's not a word about contribution to American security that involves solving a dispute, negotiating with adversaries, and conducting diplomacy. Now, that's what the enterprise is that we heard about during the Iran-Contra hearings, is this private hunk of money, and we don't know how many, many monies and millions, to keep the enterprise going. William Casey had 55 operations going at the time of his death. And that strategy, once Reagan was in, is completely consistent with the goals and aims that were stated a long time ago in 1941 and by J. Edgar Hoover in 1939, 1930, and Errol Flynn in the milieu in which he came. To conclude this, the article also mentioned that Caspar Weinberger and Alexander Haig stand there with the president. I understand, I was told this evening, that Caspar Weinberger is ready to resign. There are 1,000 reasons why he should. Usually when that happens, somebody worse gets in, but I don't think they grow them worse. And we'll talk about him. He's on the Monterey Peninsula right now, and I know he isn't listening to World Watchers, so I can talk about him. So I'm going to conclude this part of World Watchers and then continue with the talk show part in about 4 minutes. Before I finish, we want to thank Coast Components at 684-1185, the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that brought you the past hour of World Watchers. The previous hour, World Watchers, was made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. You hang in, and I'll be back with you in a little bit. Why are these women here? Why is there the sadness in their eyes? Why are the soldiers here? Their faces fixed like stone. I can't see what it is that they despise. The missing, they're dancing with the dead. They dance with the invisible ones. Their anguish is unsaid. Dancing with their fathers. They're dancing with their sons. Dancing with their husbands. They dance alone. Thank you.
descansan con los desaparecidos.